Chapter 25. Alarms blasted Jaina from sleep. She slept in her pilot's coveralls because it was warmer that way. The techs had never quite got the heating system to work in the pilot's quarters, though strangely enough the engineer's own heaters seemed to work perfectly well. So frequent had been the drills that she drew on her boots and grabbed her pilot's helmet without even opening her eyes. She managed to pry open her gummed lids as she sprinted down the corridor that led to the docking bays. 5 strides later, the artificial gravity snapped off as the moonlet's defense shields went on. Power supply problems had been continuous, and judging by present evidence, were unresolved. There had been a rumor that someone had dropped a decimal point in a requisition, and that EBAC-9's power supply was 1/10 the size it was supposed to be. Jaina used the force to push herself forward, snagging Vale on the way as her wingmate floundered in the reduced gravity, unable to get traction for her boots. In the docking bay, Jaina flung Vale toward her starfighter, then jumped for her own X-wing. R2-B3, which had never left the bay, was already in the second seat and had the electronics switched on, the repulsor lifts glowing and the quad-ion engines warming. The astromech tweedled a greeting as Jaina buckled herself into her seat and watched the last of her squadron's pilots race, float, or flop their way through the reduced gravity to their craft. When the last one had checked in over the comlink, Jaina opened a channel to EBAC control. "This is Twin One. Twin Sun's squadron, ready for launch."
"Launch immediately, Twin One. The shield in Sector 12 is down for you."
EBAC control seemed a little overexcited this morning.
"Acknowledged."
She switched to her intership channel.
"We have clearance, people. Let's go."
Jaina's X-Wing swung aloft on its repulsor lifts and floated toward the docking bay doors. As the massive doors parted for her, she triggered the ion engines and launched herself into the star-strewn half-night beyond. In space, as she waited for the others to launch and form on her starfighter, she looked at her displays and saw Farlander's capital ships hovering 8 light minutes out, all of them launching starfighters. And beyond Farlander, bright starbursts blossomed onto the displays, squadrons of enemy ships in their hundreds and thousands. Suddenly, electricity snarled through her nerves, and the sleep that clung to her was burned away. This was not a drill. This was a force of a size that hadn't been seen since the attack on Coruscant. And then Jaina felt a surge through the force, a sense that a powerful mind had just focused on her, like a searchlight on a helpless insect. Horror shivered through her bones as she recognized the sensation. Voxen. The howls of the Voxen rose around Savong La, and he felt triumph rise in him like a glorious wind. He raised his arms, hands clawed as if to tear the sky asunder. Jedi. The Jedi were here. That skulking coward Numanor had been right. Above him, blaze bugs rose into the air, hovering in place to form a three-dimensional representation of the battle. The pitch of their wings and the flashing of their scarlet abdomens identifying the size and status of all ships in the area, friend and enemy alike. The Voxen howled again. Wild joy rose in Savong La.
"By Yun Yu Zhang," he shouted, "the stinking intendant was right."
The New Republic forces were completely outnumbered. No doubt if it were possible to flee, the enemy would be doing so. But EBAC was in a dead end, and no retreat was possible. They had to fight. And should the Jedi attempt to hide on EBAC-9 or any other body in this system, Savong La had the Voxen. 6 of the Jedi hunting beasts had been off Mirker when the rest of their species was destroyed. The Voxen had very short lifespans, and these were near the end of theirs, their green scales yellowed, their eyes filmed and weary. But as soon as they'd sensed Jedi in the system, they'd thrown off their lethargy, and their tails lashed eagerly back and forth. The embracing tendrils of the cognition throne writhed atop his head, feeding him tactical data and keeping him in contact with Blood Sacrifice's Yamask, which wordlessly directed the thousands of ships, coral skippers, and transports at the War Master's command. In a circle around the cognition throne
were a group of subalterns, apprentices and readers, the former with Villips that kept Savong La in touch with his squadrons. Savong La felt sudden confusion from the Yamask. The enemy were jamming its signals. This hardly mattered. The odds were so great. Savong La called out orders that would be transmitted by the subalterns around him with their Villips. The battle group of Yun Yamka will advance and engage the enemy. The battle groups of Yun Xin and Yun Ka will advance on the flanks of the enemy and envelop him. The battle groups of Yun Yuzhan and Yun Harla will remain in reserve. The battle group named for the slayer would engage the enemy, and then the battle groups named for the lovers would converge on the enemy in a true lover's embrace and destroy them. Two more battle groups would remain in reserve, including the War Master Zone, to follow the enemy through hyperspace should they manage to escape, though it was unlikely that the infidels would manage an escape, pinned as they were against the gravity well of a huge gas giant. Acknowledgements poured in from the commanders in the different battle groups. The blaze bugs overhead swarmed and flashed as dispositions shifted. The enemy were maneuvering cautiously, trying to keep between the advancing battle group of Yun Yamka and Ebak 9. This suited the War Master perfectly. The defenders were a slow, easy target against which he could hurl his overwhelming strength. Savong La's satisfaction grew as he watched the enemy plod toward destruction. The battle group of Yun Yamka began to maneuver into extended order to lay itself alongside the enemy. Two capital ships to the enemy's one. And then Savong La sensed a shift in the infidels' dispositions. The blaze bugs began to move, their horizon patterns swinging subtly to a new configuration. The War Master watched in growing unease as the enemy squadron shifted swiftly from a long, extended line into a compact, pointed blade. A spearhead pointed into the Yuzhan Vong battle group. In a flare of intense fire, the New Republic squadron pierced the Yuzhan Vong extended line, shattering the invaders' formation. Eight of the largest Yuzhan Vong ships, hit by the combined power of the entire enemy squadron, were left disabled or dead. The claws of the Wuasa at the end of Savong La's leg clutched at the frame of his throne in anger. But his words, as he gave his next order, were calm. The battle group of Yun Yamka would engage the infidels as closely as possible. The Yuzhan Vong would take more losses as the dispersed ships closed with the compact enemy. But then superior numbers would begin to tell, and so would the battle groups of Yun Xin and Yun Ka, which would soon be in a position to envelop the enemy and finish them off. The battle was still his. It would take a little more time. That was all. And time the War Master had in plenty. In a room that smelled of protein and blood deep within the domotech of the Intendant Snowmanor, stood before his superior Yuxkel, a villip in his hands. The villip had formed into the face of an executor on Savong La's flagship, one of the few members of the Intendant class on the expeditionary force. "The enemy is maneuvering well," the executor said. "But still we will crush him. Our numbers are overwhelming." Yuxkel growled as he paced back and forth. "We've been surprised," he muttered. "I don't like surprises, and neither does Supreme Overlord Shimra." When the call came, Mara was alone in the Skywalker apartment, looking at Hollows of Ben. She went to the comm and saw Winter gazing calmly back at her. "It's begun," Winter said. "Akbar and I are going up to Fleet Command. You may join us if you wish." Mara felt a sudden dryness in her mouth. "Of course," she said. "I'll be right there." It's not working. The faint thought floated toward Jaina from Madurin, in position on General Farlander's bridge. What's not working? The trickster jammers. The ones that would identify enemy ships as belonging to the wrong side and cause their friends to shoot at them. Another piece of bad luck, but Jaina was too frantic to feel badly about it now. Her own target was coming up. "Shadow bomb away." Jaina shoved the dumb weapon ahead with a push of the force and drew back on the stick to bring her X-Wing to a slightly different trajectory. Ahead, the target enemy cruiser lay in a blaze of fire as Kian Farlander's entire squadron swept past it, turbo lasers churning out fire while missiles corkscrewed through the void between ships. "Bomb away!" came Tisar's hissing voice, followed by Lobaka's howl as he, too, flung a shadow bomb at the enemy. General Farlander hadn't been content to punch through the enemy formation only once. He had spun his entire squadron around and done it a second time before the enemy could concentrate against him. Jaina felt Tisar and Loey through the force. As well as the dumb shadow bombs, they were all shoving at the enemy, while Madurin was a presence from her place on General Farlander's ship. As the only Jedi in the system, they were too few to create a proper force meld, but the three Jedi who led the flights of Twin Sun's squadron were so close, and by now so experienced in their work, that the meld was hardly necessary.
"Skips at point 2, Major," Vale's voice was calm. "Getting set to bounce us. Turn to engage. Now."
Jaina rotated and fired the X-Wing's quad engines. Engaging the enemy head-on was a lot safer than letting them jump on Twin Sun's tails. Ahead, flashes marked oncoming enemy fire, a steady pulse of projectiles.
"Leapfrog, even and odd," Jaina said,
and extended her forward shields as she was aware of Twin Three pulling up even with her, the overlapping shields of the two X-Wings covering her entire four-fighter flight. She began stuttering laser fire at the enemy, though she doubted it would have much effect. Doubtless the enemy would have their own Dovin Basals deployed forward against her fire. Enemy fire began to hammer her shields. Flying by instinct and the force, she blinked against the brilliant flashes and tried to read her instruments to know when the shield's power situation grew critical. In the event, it was R2-B3 who chittered the warning at her.
"Leapfrog, now!" she called, and throttled back.
Twins 1 and 3 fell back, while Twins 2 and 4 surged into their place, their fresh shields covering the entire flight. It was a precision maneuver, all four starfighters maneuvering within a tolerance of mere centimeters. Thanks to endless drills and practice in battle, Twin Sun's squadron had come a long way since the battle over Far Thunder, when all Jaina could do was arrange them in a long line and have them play follow the leader. The coral skippers flashed by, no more than blurs on their converging course. Normally, she'd call for the squadron to split and drop on them, but maneuvering and combat took too much time. She needed to stick with Farlander and his compact group, not get caught away from support.
"Turning left 60 degrees, Jaina said, a course that would bring them toward Farlander and the main body.
As her flight performed a perfect crossover turn, the maneuver turned her cockpit toward the enemy cruiser just in time to see the brilliant explosions of three shadow bombs planting themselves along its flank. She could see the ship tremble with each hit. Over her comm, she could hear the hissing of Barabel amusement. She was glad Tisar could find something funny in all this. Then Tisar's tone turned serious.
"Skips astern, twin leader."
"Maximum acceleration," Jaina said, and punched throttles. Her displays showed more enemy than she could properly comprehend, but her sense of the battle suggested the enemy were finally coordinating a response to General Farlander's maneuver. He had cut twice through the enemy squadron, wrecking ships both times, but it was clear the Yuuzhan Vong weren't going to let him do it again. Those ships nearby were keeping their distance, while those farther away were scrambling to catch up. Swarms of coral skippers were pouring in from all directions. Soon Farlander would find himself swamped by superior numbers and held in place for destruction, like a bantamweight fighter grappled by a 160-kilo wrestler. Not to mention the two huge squadrons looming on his flanks, or the other two squadrons hanging in the rear. Enemy fire boomed on Jaina's aft shields as she fled, a surprising number of shots. The pursuing coral skippers were throwing everything they had. Jaina did a little jinking, but it didn't seem to help. The sheer volume of fire was disturbing.
The pursuers broke off when Janus' squadron entered the overlapping fields of fire of Farlander's capital ships, but by that point it hardly seemed to matter. So much fire was coming from so many directions that Jaina still found her shields getting slammed, even though it didn't seem as if anyone was taking the trouble to aim specifically at her. "Friendly cruiser on our left," she said. "Let's take some of the pressure off it." She led Twin Suns on a high-speed slash against the coral skippers that had just made their attack runs on the cruiser, and were now perfect targets as they maneuvered in preparation for another attack. One burst into flame at the touch of her quad lasers, and she thought she killed another with a missile. "Rolling right," she began to call, and then there was a brilliant flash on her canopy, matched by a wail in the force, a mental keen that brought tears to Jaina's dazzled eyes. "What was that?" she demanded. "Twin Two," said Twin Three. "She's gone."
"What do you mean, gone?" Jaina demanded.
"She didn't get out." Twin Three sounded stunned. A huge projectile hit her fighter. It was vaporized.
"Who hit her?"
Jaina's hand suddenly got busy on the controls, ready to jink if the squadron was under attack.
"No one, just random fire. There's a lot of it out here."
"No kidding," someone said.
"Vale," Jaina thought.
Another wingmate had gone, like Annie Capstan. The first casualty since the battle over Far Thunder. The first since she'd built Twin Sun's squadron into its highly drilled, perfected form. The first casualty, she thought with a sick certainty, but not the last. She fought away the tears and the grief. She had to be in control now.
"Twin Three, Twin Four, keep close to me," she said. "Rolling right."
The rolling maneuver put her in an inverted position with regard to the New Republic squadron, able to view the fight through her canopy. She saw a Republic-class cruiser hit with a lance of fire, saw compartments venting ice crystals that had once been air. The space between the heavy ships was thick with fighters, both friendly and enemy. A furball, she saw, was now forming around the damaged Republic-class cruiser, a horde of arriving coral skippers tangling with a couple of squadrons of E-wings.
"Starfighter battle at 030, she said. "Each flight form echelon. Each pilot pick your target. Reform on the other side. Look for your wingmate first, and then for me. Understood?"
They understood. She had drilled them well.
"This is for Vale," she said, and had to blink back tears again as she punched the throttle.
She felt Loey, Tisar, and Madurin sending her strength through the force, and she radiated her thanks. For her first target, she picked a coral skipper that was lining up for a shot at an E-wing. Hers was a deflection shot, but she synced perfectly with her ship, slewed the nose of the X-wing around just slightly, and touched the quad triggers. The coral skipper blew with the second shot, and then she whipped past the debris, triggering a missile onto the tail of another skip that presented itself. She had the satisfaction of seeing the coral skipper shatter before she was through the furball and pulling into the clear. Clear, being a relative term. The void was still filled with beams and missiles and cannonades, all of it once aimed at something but now possessed by a dreadful randomness.
"Reform on me," Jaina called, frantically scanning her displays.
Tisar's hissing voice came over the comm. "We're being bounced, Twin Leader. This one requests assistance."
"You got it."
She cast a glance at her displays, saw Tisar's blip behind her.
"Twins Three and Four, with me. Streak, take your flight and—"
A roar from Lobaka confirmed Jaina's order before she finished giving it. Jaina hauled back on the stick, hoping she wouldn't get smacked out of space while her maneuvering killed her velocity. She half-rolled through the turn to keep herself out of enemy sights. When she'd completed her maneuver, the sight took her breath away. An enemy frigate had laid itself alongside the Republic-class cruiser, the space between them a blaze of furious energies as the two huge vessels slammed into each other at point-blank range. Around both capital ships were at least 200 smaller craft, darting and weaving and blasting each other. She could see at least a dozen craft on fire. Most of the smaller craft were Yuuzhan Vong. More enemy were appearing every second. General Farlander was getting swamped by the enemy.
"Stay with me, 3 and 4, she told her remaining flight. "Now let's go."
As she shoved the throttles forward, she felt Tisar's predatory presence through the Force, and she sent him a burst of strength. And then she sent through the Force a simple message to Madurin. "We need help." Madurin sent a breeze of calm through the Force, and with it the knowledge of help already on the way. The sending was followed immediately by bright splashes on Jaina's cockpit displays as more ships appeared out of hyperspace. Jaina's heart leapt as she felt her mental horizons expand. Personalities crowded into her mind. Kip Duron, Saba in the Wild Knights, Zek, Corrin Horn, Alima Rar, and Jason. Jason in his place on the bridge of the Bothan assault cruiser, Rall Roost. "We're here." The Force message was a massed shout. "Glad to hear it," Jaina sent as she got a coral skipper in her sights, but right now she had to get some Vong off Tisar's tail. She triggered her lasers. A new howl chorused from the Voxen, and Savong La watched in amazement and rising anger as more blaze bugs rose from the floor to form a new enemy squadron in the overhead display. A large force, he saw, a match for any of his 5. Perhaps not so large. He saw now that a number of the enemy ships were big transports, which promptly vanished into hyperspace, leaving the rest behind to fight. Apparently the new enemy were a supply convoy and its escort. It wasn't so inexplicable they should be here then. The new arrivals had appeared just as he was about to order the battle groups of Yun Xin and Yun Ka to complete their envelopment of the enemy, the lover's embrace that would destroy the infidels. But the new enemy force hung off to one flank, near the battle group of Yun Xin, and he ordered the enveloping movement now. The new arrivals could pounce on Yun Xin's rear. "The battle group of Yun Xin will engage the newcomers," he said. "The battle group of Yun Hala will move to support, but will not engage without my command. The battle group of Yun Ka will reinforce the battle group of Yun Yamka and destroy the original defenders." That left his own battle group of Yun Yuzhan still in reserve against any further surprises. With his group were the troop ships that would be used to secure EBAC-9 once the enemy fleet was dealt with. He still had overwhelming numbers. And since the Voxen had howled again, there were more Jedi among the newcomers. More sacrifices for the gods, he thought with satisfaction, and sat back in the cognition throne to watch his forces complete his victory. Through the Jedi Force Meld, Jason could feel Jaina in her cockpit, feel her determination, her cool analysis, and the edges of panic that sometimes broke through her composure. "Skip on my 6, breaking right." "This one has destroyed it." This from Tisar. "Thanks." They weren't words, really, these bursts of image and intensity from the Force, but that's how they translated. Jaina, Twin Sons, and all of Farlander's Force were heavily engaged at great odds. His own new arrivals, with most of the fleet's Jedi, were moving against one of the huge battle groups that loomed like an overhanging cliff on Farlander's flank. The Jedi Meld was skating on the edge of Jason's ability to comprehend. There were too many ships in the picture for him to absorb. Fortunately, 3/5 of the enemy were unengaged, and he could safely leave them out of his mental picture. He called out coordinates, maneuvering Kreefe's force so as to provide maximum effectiveness at the moment of collision. "Fire Dovin missile," Admiral Kreefe ordered. He was too excited to sit in the grand chair reserved for a full admiral, and instead paced back and forth just behind Jason. Jason was going to find this annoying if Kreefe kept it up for long. "Dovin missile fired, sir. Transmit coordinates of the space mine to General Farlander. Coordinates transmitted, Admiral." "Wonderful." Jason heard Kreefe clap his hands. "This is working well, don't you think?" But Jason's mind really wasn't on what was occurring on the Admiral's bridge. Instead, he kept his focus on Twin Sun's squadron and the desperate battle Jaina was fighting. "Missed. Louis, look out." Jason considered summoning his Vong sense, his ability to empathize with and sometimes influence the enemy. But that would mean losing the Force and the ability to help his comrades. He decided that remaining in the meld was his best option.
"I've lost my rear shields. That was my last missile."
"Go with the force," Jason sent. He closed his eyes and pushed out as much care, strength, and support as he could. And behind him, dim in the force, he felt another presence, powerful but cloaked, that radiated strength, but to Jason alone. Vergere.
Thirty light-years from the battle, at a narrow point of the long hyperspace route that led to EBAC and its moons, a small New Republic task force dropped out of hyperspace. Most of the ships were unarmed. This was not a fighting force, but even so, its mission was vital. The squadron commander first fired a single missile, one containing an interdictor, modeled after a Eugen von Dovenbasel. The interdictor would serve as a space mine. Once the mine had been set in the center of the hyperspace lane, the other ships began to drop more conventional mines, mines with detection gear, explosive cores, and maneuvering thrusters. The mines immediately took up station around the Dovenbasel mine. The unarmed ships continued to lay mines. Dozens of mines. Hundreds. Thousands. Tens of thousands.
"Got it!" Twin Six shouted. She'd just shot a skip off Louie's tail, and the Wookiee gave a roar of thanks. Jaina blinked sweat from her eyes and hauled her X-wing right, away from a stream of plasma cannon fire. That enabled her to get a deflection shot at a coral skipper speeding by. But the Vong's Dovenbasel sucked the laser bolts, and suddenly Jaina was dancing away from more fire coming at her from her starboard quarter. It was friendly fire. Laser bolts from a B-wing. But it was deadly for all that, and Jaina didn't want any part of it.
"All ships," came an announcement on the command comm. "This is General Farlander. All ships to alter course simultaneously on the following coordinates."
Jaina tried to absorb the coordinates and failed. She'd have to just get a visual and follow. That is, if she could ever get free of this fur ball composed of friendly and enemy craft, debris, and random deadly fire.
"What was that coordinate?" from Twin Nine.
"I didn't get it either," Twin Four.
"Change course on my mark," Farlander continued. 5, 4, 3, 2, mark."
Jaina saw the capital ships around her suddenly swing massively to a new heading and ignite their engines. The Eugen Vong took a moment to respond, but soon they, too, were matching Farlander's maneuver. Except for the ships that couldn't. Trailing behind were the casualties, the dead ships, the wounded, and the out-of-control, both friendly and enemy. And Jaina was too tangled up with the Eugen Vong to follow. If she straightened her course to pursue Farlander, she'd be blasted by a dozen enemy.
"Squadron to form into single line ahead," came the order from Farlander.
"Slagged him,"
from Twin Three. Enemy fire banged on Jaina's rear shields, and she jerked the fighter into a roll as her astromech chittered angrily at the attackers.
"Rolling left," she said, as if anyone were keeping track of her movements.
As far as she could tell, the members of Twin Sun's squadron were all on their own, so separated in the melee they could no longer guard one another's backs. There was a flash. Debris thundered on Jaina's shields.
"Who was that?" Twin Seven's voice.
"Twin Nine."
Tisar's voice was calm, but Jaina could feel his anger in the force.
"Did she get out?"
"Negative."
Anger ripped into Jaina. She'd lost another pilot, and she hadn't even known Twin Nine was in danger. Time to kill some Vong, she decided. It was what she was here for. She looked for a coral skipper and put it in her sights. Sabong La watched with pleasure as Farlander's squadron fled the battle. The sudden maneuver had caught the Eugen Vong by surprise, but the battle group of Yun Yamka had corrected quickly and were now hanging tenaciously onto the enemy. The battle group of Yun Ka had altered course to intercept and would soon join the fight and finish the infidels. The War Master's pleasure was increased as the battle group of Yun Xin slammed into the newly arrived squadron with proper headlong Yuuzhan Vong spirit. The blaze bugs overhead began to moderate their pitch as missiles and projectile weapons began to inflict damage. A sudden whine from the blaze bugs caught his attention, and his eyes widened in surprise. Farlander's squadron was in the process of another course change, a radical one this time. Sabong La couldn't believe how rapidly the New Republic capital ships were turning. They were whipping around a full 270 degrees, and without losing velocity. It was a clear impossibility, yet they were doing it, and leaving the battle group of Yun Yamka behind. And then his nerves turned chill, as he realized that the infidel's new course was sending them straight into the battle between the battle group of Yun Xin and the newly arrived force. The battle group of Yun Xin would be caught between the two forces and hammered. "The battle group of Yun Hala will engage the enemy immediately," he ordered. That would reinforce the battle group of Yun Xin and repair some of the damage the enemy maneuver had created. "The battle group of Yun Yamka will regroup and prepare to re-enter combat. The battle group of Yun Ka will..." He paused as more blaze bugs began to whine, a whole host of them rising from the floor to hover in the air and form something new. What now? He thought. Jason watched as Kian Farlander's entire squadron of capital ships performed the solo slingshot around the Dovan Basel space mine analog. The modified interdictor missile that Kreefe's Ralroost had fired on its arrival on the field of battle. The enemy fighting them continued on their previous course, unable to claw their way after Farlander without performing a conventional turn and losing most of their speed. A few of the enemy, by guesswork or luck, managed to work out what was happening and make the turn along with Farlander, but these were outnumbered and quickly blasted out of existence. The rest would be out of the battle for some time as the capital ships lumbered into their turns and tried to maneuver into some kind of appropriate formation. "Nice work," Jason sent to Madurin. "Thanks." Ralroost shuddered to a hit, and Jason was reminded that a Bothan assault cruiser was so named because it concentrated most of its power on attack, not two shields or defense. "Breach between frames M&N," someone said. "Frame seals are holding. Damage control is responding." "Hammer them! Hammer them!" Admiral Kreefe, shouting, swung his fists dangerously in the air over Jason's head. Kreefe's ships were engaged in a furious close-range action with the enemy. Jason could feel Kip and his dozen, Corrin Horn and Rogue Squadron, and the all-Jedi Wild Knights flying in frantic combat. The Knights in particular were tearing through the enemy, their predatory reflexes in perfect synchronization with the Force. An all-Jedi squadron was a terrible thing indeed. Then Jason felt another surge in the Force, and he felt a new mind enter the Jedi meld, a mind uncertain and only half-trained. "Hello, Mom," he sent. The full power of the Force meld took Leia by surprise. She was in the co-pilot's chair of the Millennium Falcon, which was echeloned with the rest of the Smugglers Alliance ships around the bright red Star Destroyer Errant Venture. No sooner had she fallen out of hyperspace than the meld reached for her, and part of her mind was viewing a burning enemy frigate with Corrin Horn fighting a jaw-clenching combat with Kip Duron, or engaging in vicious, efficient pack behavior with the Barabel Wild Knights. The intensity of it took her breath away. "Hello, Mom." Jason's presence was clear in the Force. "Hello, Jason," she sent uncertainly. Unlike the others in the fight, her Force training had been haphazard, and she hadn't had the opportunity to practice the meld with others. But the power of the meld was so strong that she felt her uncertainty fade as soon as she received her first order from Jason. She received another message from Jason, felt the coordinates burning in her mind. She looked at the Falcon's navigation displays and saw the point indicated. She translated the coordinates and keyed them in. "Han, Jason wants us here." "What Jason wants, Jason gets," Han said, and switched his comm unit to the command channel. "Han," Captain Solo again, with his insignia pinned to his otherwise civilian vest, commanded the Smugglers Alliance Squadron from the Millennium Falcon. "I'm happier in a smaller ship," he said when Booster Tarek offered errant venture. "And besides, a Star Destroyer is too big a target." The motley Smugglers Alliance Squadron began its change of course. Leia's Nogri bodyguards, in the turbolaser turrets, chuckled in their whispery voices and fired practice shots into the void. And then Leia felt a shard of terror clear through the force meld, and she knew Jaina was in trouble.
"This is the critical moment," Akbar said.
He, Winter, and Mara sat in a gallery above the Fleet Command Operations Room, where Sin Sov stood amid a bustle of aides, screens, and constantly flowing data. A hollow of the battle at EBAC-9 floated in the air above the busy room. The Smugglers Alliance squadron under Han Solo had just appeared in the display, the ships picked out in brilliant orange. It was a massive contrast to the last time Mara had watched Sin Sov in action. Then the Supreme Commander had been forced to conduct his defense of Coruscant in front of a full session of the Senate, with the Senator shouting advice and hurling threats, and Chief of State Borsk Felya countermanding Sov's orders from the Speaker's podium. The Supreme Commander seemed a lot more comfortable in his current situation, and no wonder.
"It is at this point that the enemy might begin to suspect a trap," Akbar said.
He slumped in his chair and his voice was slurred with weariness. Being on dry land again was taking its toll.
"Alas, that we needed to send this squadron to prevent Farlander and Creefe from becoming overwhelmed. Fortunately, it is small and innocuous."
He sighed heavily.
"Perhaps they will not take alarm. Perhaps not."
"Rolling left," Jaina shouted. But a stream of plasma cannon projectiles met her as she rolled, one stunning impact after another on her shields, and she knew there was a second enemy behind her. If she broke right, she'd run into the first enemy. Fortunately, space is three-dimensional. She went up. An enemy missile shot past her canopy, and then she was free. She rolled again and went after her pursuers. She found one and was on the verge of attempting a deflection shot when R2B3 chittered a warning, and she jerked the stick away from the flaming projectiles that soared past her.
"Twin 3 and 4, I'm in a crossfire here. Where are you?" she demanded.
"3's hit," 4's voice. "I saw him eject."
"Where are you?"
Jaina demanded.
"I don't know."
Jaina jinked away from a line of fire only to have her shields slammed by a missile. Her astromech droid squealed at the state of the shields, which were near collapse. Jaina blinked sweat from her eyes and jinked again, and by chance found a coral skipper floating across her sights. She fired the quad lasers and felt satisfaction at the sight of fire burning along the enemy hull. If she hadn't killed it, she'd at least hurt it. A howl came over the comm, and Jaina's force-impelled reflexes jerked at the controls. The howl was followed by another, this one of satisfaction, as Loey scragged the coral skipper that had been on Jaina's tail. Between the two of them, Jaina and Loey hunted down and blew apart a third coral skipper, and then she found a moment to raise her faceplate and mop sweat from her face with a gloved hand. They were on the edge of the furball that had originally surrounded Farlander's squadron, but which had now become a separate flight, starfighters and coral skippers circling and hunting each other in a remarkably small area. She felt Tisar's urgency through the force.
"This one has lost shields and an engine," he called.
The force told her where Tisar was before her displays did.
"Streak," she told Loey, "stay on my wing."
And she dived back into the fight. Savong La gazed in furious concentration at the small squadron that had appeared on the flank of the battle group of Yun Ka. It was built around a single very large wedge-shaped ship, with a modest number of medium-sized vessels and a lot of small ones. By itself it wasn't very menacing, except that it could attack the rear of the Yun Ka battle group if he committed it to battle. Better to squash this small group first, he decided. Even though this little squadron wasn't large enough to turn the tide of battle, it was better to be safe than not. The battle group of Yun Kai is to engage the small squadron on its flank and destroy it. A subaltern relayed the order. There was a moment in which the subaltern communed with his villip, after which he turned and saluted with crossed arms. "Commander Drugan begs to ask whether we have been led into an ambush, War Master." For a moment Savangla's lip curled at the insolence of Drugan, but then he stopped to consider the question. Had all the information of the final redoubt been nothing but an attempt to lure him here into the deep core? Had that schemer Nomanor been out-schemed? The appearance of two enemy squadrons was suspicious, but one of them seemed to be a convoy escort, and the other was under strength and composed of such a heterogeneous array of vessels that it was barely military at all. If he, Savangla, had planned an ambush, he would have used overwhelming force and pounced from all directions. He wouldn't have fed in two squadrons piecemeal, neither of them large enough to do anything more than delay the outcome. No, it had to be a coincidence that a convoy arrived at just this moment. The second squadron was probably a scratch force summoned by a distress call. "Tell Commander Drugan there is no ambush," Savangla said. "Order him to engage immediately." "At once, War Master." Leia could see that Han was impressed by the size and strength of the enemy battle group that suddenly swerved to engage him. He blew a long breath, then cast a glance over his shoulder at Leia and said, "I don't suppose the United Jedi Cluster Mind has any suggestions about how to handle this one."
"I'm afraid not," Leia said.
The Meld knew an engagement had to occur, but its tactical advice was a little unclear.
"Well, then," Han breathed.
He looked at the displays again, then flicked on the comm. "This is Captain Solo," he told the squadron. "We can't hope to match the enemy with numbers or firepower, so we'll have to make use of speed, flexibility, and—" his brow creased in worry. "Tactical brilliance," he finished hopefully. Leia reached out and squeezed his shoulder.
"Go get him, Slick," she said.
Ralroost shuddered to another hit, but Jason's mind was in the Force, seeing through the eyes of the Jedi Meld. His mind strained to keep up with all the information flowing through the Force. Through Leia's eyes, he saw Han's slashing attack on the larger enemy battle group, a hit-and-run assault that the enemy was too large and slow to counter. Through Maduran's perceptions, he felt Farlander's battered squadron slam into the enemy, taking Kreefe's enemies in the rear and inflicting damage beyond their numbers. Through the eyes of Kip and Corrin and Saba, he saw the flash of fire, coral skippers burning, enemy frigates and cruisers trembling to the force of shadow bombs. And he felt Jaina's desperation and Lobaka's ferocity as they aided Tisar's grim fight for survival. Jason's fingers twitched with the impulse to run to Ralroost's fighter bays, to jump into his X-wing and fly to Jaina's assistance. But he knew he served the cause better on Ralroost, where he was able to keep the other Jedi focused, help them sense each other's locations and coordinate their actions with one another. Jason jumped as Kreefe's white furred hand dropped onto his shoulder. "Now, Jason," the Admiral said, "our minefield is complete. Now you'll see the destruction of the enemy." Kreefe gave an order on the comm. And then, mere minutes later, as the squadrons leapt from their hiding places in the deep core hyperspace lanes, more New Republic ships began to appear, one squadron after another. A host of Jedi minds rose into the Meld, Tahiri, Zek, Olima, and the burning power of Luke Skywalker. All here at the finish. The Voxen cried again as they detected one new Jedi after another, their weary howls now more akin to whimpers. The blaze bugs that flew into the air to mark the new infidel squadrons provided a strange dissonance in Savangla, for the picture that rose to Savangla's brain, fed by the tendrils of the cognition throne, showed the enemy in even greater numbers, vast numbers of infidels all around him. It took a moment for him to realize why he was receiving two different impressions. So many were the infidels that the War Master had run out of blaze bugs to represent them in the display. Fury possessed him. What did it matter that he was now outnumbered? that his forces had been drawn out of position and were about to be engulfed. The Yuuzhan Vong were conquerors. The gods had promised them victory. Swiftly, he reordered his forces. The battle groups of Yun Hala and Yun Xin were heavily engaged against the original enemy squadron and the first set of reinforcements. They had local superiority in numbers, though both sides had lost all formation, and the battle had dissolved into a general melee. Sabong La ordered these forces to redouble their efforts and destroy their foes before more infidel battle groups could intervene. The battle group of Yun Yamka, which had opened the battle and been left on its own since the original enemy squadron had made its unexpected turning maneuver, had regrouped. Sabong La decided to sacrifice it. He ordered the battle group to hurl itself against the enemy reinforcements in order to keep them occupied while he tried to win the fight with his other forces.
"Heroic Vong Prat," the group commander replied when he heard the order. The battle cry of the warrior caste.
Sabong La swelled with pride at the unquestioning spirit of the doomed commander. He knew he, his ships, and his warriors were going to their deaths, but still he gladly accepted the clash of battle. The battle group of Yun Ka, which had been in pursuit of the small, agile force that had appeared as the second group of reinforcements, was ordered to break off its pursuit and maneuver against several of the infidel squadrons. If Commander Drugan maneuvered cleverly enough, he could occupy a large group of the enemy without committing himself against overwhelming numbers, thus buying time for the rest. That left the reserve battle group of Yun Yuzhan under Sabong La's personal command. It was the only force that hadn't been engaged with the enemy, that hadn't suffered casualties, and that still had complete freedom of maneuver. Sabong La hesitated for a moment, then decided to take his battle group straight into battle alongside the battle groups of Yun Hala and Yun Xin. If he could force a victory there, it might create other opportunities. He gave the orders, and his forces screamed toward the battle. Sabong La had been led into a trap by Numanor's information.
"You have betrayed us," Yuuzhan said. "You must pay with your life."
Numanor calmly reached into his pocket for the Blorash jelly that he then flung at Yuuzhan's feet. The high prefect waved his arms, trying not to topple, as the jelly pinned his feet to the floor. He gave Numanor a wild look.
"What are you doing, executor?" he demanded.
"Giving Shimra an itch." Numanor surprised himself with how calmly he was behaving. He slashed his amphistaff down on Yuuzhan's head. The high prefect folded into unconsciousness, his feet still pinned by the semi-sentient jelly tendrils. Numanor looked at the sprawled body of his superior and hoped he wasn't dead. He'd always rather liked Yuuzhan. Numanor knew, of course, what had happened. His spies had been identified and fed false information designed to lead the Yuuzhan Vong fleet into this trap. Whoever had done this had been brilliant, setting out a series of clues and letting Numanor himself draw the conclusions. But there would be little use explaining to his superiors how brilliantly he had been played by the enemy, not in the wake of a military disaster of this magnitude. They would want Numanor's head, not his explanations. It was time for Numanor to vanish, to don an Uglith masker to disguise his appearance, and then to disappear among the anonymous worker caste. After the search died down, he could create further identities and credentials that would get him off the planet. But where would he go? He would be hunted throughout Yuuzhan Vong-controlled territory, and if he escaped into the New Republic, he would have to live forever in disguise, an object of suspicion wherever he went. He decided to think about all that later. Right now, he needed to concentrate on escape. Twin Sun's squadron was down to 8 starfighters, and of these, only Lobaka's was intact. Tisar had lost an engine and half his shields. Jaina had lost her rear shields and her upper right foil along with its laser, and her cockpit smelled of fear and sour sweat. Others suffered light to heavy damage. They had expended all their missiles and bombs. Fortunately, they were no longer engaged with the enemy. The larger battles had passed them by, and the fighter-versus-fighter battle seemed to be over.
The coral skippers had either been killed or gone somewhere else, and only scattered B and E wings were near them. Through the Jedi meld, Jaina could still feel others experiencing the shock of combat. Wearily, she turned the nose of her craft toward the huge battle nearby, where Jason and Kip and the Wild Knights were engaged. But from Jason she felt a cool touch of the mind, followed by his voice on calm.
"Don't, you're too shot up.
I can feel the others fighting. I can't stand by.
You must.
The others would only endanger themselves protecting you."
The meld was in agreement with Jason. She felt their unanimity, but still she felt the urge not to abandon her friends.
"You have acquitted yourself honorably, Jaina Solo."
This was Saba's voice.
"It is now your task to preserve your own life."
"Twin Sons has permission to withdraw to EBAC-9.
This came from EBAC-9, from her own controller. Jaina felt her tension drain away. Preserve your own life. How long had it been since anyone told her to do that? Her battle was over, and the annihilation that she had feared, that she had expected, had not come.
"Acknowledged," she told the flag, and then spoke to her pilots. "Streak, I want you to cover Tisar. The rest of you form on me."
Wearily, Jaina turned her craft toward safety. Jaina, Tisar, and Lobaka had landed on EBAC-9. Luke could sense their weariness in the Force, but still he felt them trying to send strength and clarity to the others in the Jedi meld. Luke sat on the bridge of the Mon Calamari cruiser Harbinger, flagship of Garmbel Iblis, and played a game of holochess in his mind with the enemy commander. Luke's mission to the old hero of the rebellion had succeeded. Bel Iblis had brought into the deep core half the fleet with which he had been guarding Talan, divided into three battle groups. Maneuvering against that fleet was a single Yuuzhan Vong squadron, the one that had earlier been pursuing Han's squadron of Smuggler's Alliance ships. Its commander was clever and had managed to keep all three of Bel Iblis's battle groups occupied without quite engaging any of them. But it was an unfair contest. The Yuuzhan Vong had only a single piece on the hollow board, the New Republic 3, four if Han's small squadron counted. Luke, maneuvering with the aid of the Jedi meld, slowly reduced the enemy's options to two: fight and die, or flee. And he knew the Yuuzhan Vong did not run away. He ordered the three battle groups to converge.
No good, Savong La realized. His plan wasn't working. He clenched his teeth in rage. May Nomanor's flayed skin be trampled by Rakamats.
The battle groups of Yunharla and Yunxin were fighting bravely but being overwhelmed by the enemy. Two new enemy battle groups had joined the fight, fresh and formed and well organized, while the Yuuzhan Vong were scattered and locked in combat with their old enemies. The battle group of Yun Ka was in the process of being trapped by three enemy battle groups. The battle group of Yun Yam Ka, as instructed, was immolating itself against the enemy, but such bravery was useless because nothing else was going well. Only the battle group of Yun Yuuzhan, under Savong La himself, still had options. He had planned to join the battle groups of Yun Harla and Yun Xin and help them win at least a local victory, but he saw now that this plan, too, would fail, that all he could do was reinforce a battle that was already lost, offering himself to the enemy like a sacrifice upon the altar. Like a sacrifice. Despair gripped his heart in iron talons. He should die in battle. After a defeat of this magnitude, Shimra could scarcely be expected to let him live. Savong La would be lucky not to be cut down like an animal, like Chagong Hul, and instead die a sacrifice to the gods. Sacrifice. Savong La jerked bolt upright on the cognition throne. A smile drew his slashed lips tight. A sacrifice. Of course.
Alter course at once for EBAC-9, he commanded. Order the battle group of Yun Ka to head for the moon at maximum acceleration.
Jedi, he thought. The Voxen had howled when he had first brought his fleet to the system. There had been Jedi in the system then. Some of them were probably with the fleet, but Savong La believed some, at least,
would be on the ninth moon of Ebak. A sacrifice.
Luke watched in surprise as the enemy battle group, the one he had been carefully maneuvering against, suddenly bolted, its formations dissolving, every ship for itself. The Yuuzhan Vong had never before fled from a fight in such disorder, and the New Republic battle groups were unprepared for what looked like a panicked withdrawal. There was a little skirmish across the front of one of the battle groups. A few ships flared in the night and died. And then the enemy were away, with the entire fleet in pursuit. Luke didn't understand where the enemy intended to go. They weren't running directly away from him. It was almost as if they were running toward something. And then, with a dreadful certainty, he knew where they were headed. And he thought, Jaina.
I did not foresee this.
Akbar beat with one huge hand on the arm of his chair.
What a fool I have been.
Countless ships whirled in Jason's mind. He struggled madly with his expanded senses to understand what the new enemy maneuver meant, and suddenly he understood. At his realization, an electric shock rang through the Jedi Meld. He struggled to find an answer.
Calm.
He sensed Vergere's thoughts in his mind.
Calm. The Force will tell you what to do.
Suddenly Jason understood, and he was shouting orders to Admiral Creefe while he sent an urgent message through the Force.
Mom, you've got to intercept that squadron. Use everything you've got.
That would keep one of the enemy squadrons away from Ebak, at least for a while. It was only after he'd sent his instructions that he realized he might have just sent his parents to their deaths. Jason rose from his chair and turned to Admiral Creefe.
I need my X-Wing now, he shouted, and without waiting for permission ran for the turbolift.
Jason?
Creefe seemed more astonished than anything else. We need you on the flagship.
The turbolift wasn't parked at this level. In an agony of frustration, Jason slammed the control buttons.
You've already won the battle, he said. Now I have to save Jaina.
Creefe's white fur rippled as he stared at Jason. Distant rumbles echoed through the room as Ralroost's inadequate shielding absorbed hits.
Very well, Creefe said, waving a hand. Very well.
And Creefe turned back to hammering the enemy.
Han, we need to stop them.
Han cast a bewildered look over his shoulder.
Stop who?
Leia jabbed an urgent finger at the displays. The enemy squadron.
Han shrugged. They're fleeing, but they still outnumber us.
Let them go.
Anger flared in Leia's voice. They're not running. They're heading straight for Jaina.
There was a moment of stunned comprehension, and then the lines in Han's face turned grim.
Right.
He faced front and snapped on the comm.
This is Solo, he said. It's up to us to hold the Vong until our people can catch up and finish them off. Everyone pick your targets carefully. This will not be fun.
He rolled the Millennium Falcon toward the enemy and throttled up. The enemy ships, hundreds of them, got nearer and nearer.
Keep an eye on the displays, sweetheart, Han told Leia. When this gets hairy, I don't want anyone sneaking up on us.
Han brought the Smuggler's Alliance squadron right across the front of the Yuuzhan Vong formation, which meant that every weapon on his squadron bore on the enemy, while the enemy could only reply with bow weapons. Han was either going to blow the Vong noses off or force them from their course. The Vong didn't turn. Errant Venture fired first, its enormous turbolasers hurling neon-colored destruction at the enemy, and then one by one the rest of the squadron opened fire. Leia could hear the rhythmic crashing of the Nogri firing the Falcon's turbolasers. And then return fire began smashing at the shields.
Jaina felt cold sweat breaking out on her nape. Back to the fighters, she told her squadron. We'll launch and get out of the enemy's sight.
That's a negative, twin leader. It was General Farlander himself on the comm, which spoke to the importance of the message. In the background, she could hear the shouts, murmurs, and crashes of a big ship in combat.
Just get into the mine shafts and slam the blast doors behind you, Farlander said. Stick to the plan. You can hold out for hours in there, and we'll come get you before you know it.
The general is wise, Jaina, Tisar hissed.
His heavy tail lashed left and right.
Our starfighters are too damaged to make a clean escape. Several of us would be lost.
Jaina hesitated as she looked at the expectant pilots around her, then nodded. Lost. Tisar was right.
Understood, General, she said.
Around her, EBAC 9's command center braced itself for the oncoming blow. Two huge Yuuzhan Vong squadrons were headed their way.
Stick to the plan, Farlander had said. But this wasn't the plan.
The plan assumed that when the New Republic fleets arrived, the Yuuzhan Vong would realize they were ambushed and either run or fight to the death. The plan never considered that the Yuuzhan Vong would continue their assault on EBAC's ninth moon, which had no real military value at all.
Right, Jaina said. This way.
The weary pilots limped out of the command center. The gravity was still erratic. Sometimes they walked normally, and sometimes an ordinary step would catapult them to the ceiling. They took a hover car down the great central shaft that drove through the moonlet's core. From here, mine shafts branched off into the old diggings. Several of these had been equipped with the massive durasteel blast doors designed to keep the enemy out for hours. Jaina stopped the car by the bunker that had been converted to an armory.
I'm going to assume that everything else is going to go wrong, she said.
Vaxen, Lubaka howled. How can things go right?
Jaina nodded. That's why I want everyone here to have blasters, body armor, grenades, grenade launchers, and command detonated mines. And vac suits. We're pressurized here, but what can be pressurized can be depressurized.
Tisar gave a hiss of Barabel amusement.
The Major speaks his wisdom, he said.
The turbo lift seemed to take an eternity in its glide toward the fighter docking bays. Jason used his private comm to call his astromech droid and have the fighter ready for him. The Jedi meld sang in his mind. He was aware of his own anxiety eddying out to the others, reflecting back toward him. He remembered how the Force Meld had kept dissolving on Mirker, as Jedi were hurt or died, or fought one another over strategy, and he tried to keep his worries from feeding out into the others. The turbo lift jolted to a stop. It had come to a bulkhead, and all bulkheads were sealed during combat. Jason flung the lift doors open with the Force and sprinted for one of the internal airlocks that communicated between bulkheads. There was another eternity while the lock recycled, and then a narrow, spiral stair. Jason used the Force to fly down it, and then another bulkhead that communicated to the docking bay deck. He wasn't surprised to find Vergere waiting for him. She held up a hand.
"Where are you going?"
Jason didn't break stride. "To help Jaina.
You cannot help. EBAC is being attacked by a squadron of capital ships. Your single starfighter will make no difference."
"I have to try." Jason sprinted on. His X-Wing was alone in the docking bay next to a partially dismantled A-Wing, its weapons and sensor system scavenged to repair other starfighters.
"Stop. This is not your destiny."
"Maybe not, but it's my family." Vergere followed Jason, flying on pulses of the Force to match Jason's running pace.
"What can you hope to accomplish besides your own destruction?" she demanded.
Anger flamed through his mind. Jason turned to the little alien and put a hand on his lightsaber. "Are you proposing to stop me?" he demanded. Vergere settled onto the deck and slowly, sadly bowed her head.
"I will not stop you, Jason Solo. You have chosen your destiny."
Her eyes glittered.
"It is the consequences you must deal with now."
Jason turned and vaulted into the cockpit. He closed the canopy and put on his helmet. Through the Force, he could feel the cold fear that ran through Jaina's nerves. He opened the comm and asked Ralroost's docking control for permission to launch.
The Millennium Falcon skimmed along the hull of the enemy cruiser, quad lasers pumping shots into the hull as well as toward the coral skippers that danced astern. The coral skipper pilots were having a problem trying to nail the agile Falcon without hitting their own ship, and Han was trying to make the solution to that problem as difficult as he could. The Yuuzhan Vong had already put several shots into their own vessel, and Han didn't want them to stop now. The problem was that Millennium Falcon hadn't been built as a bomber. Proton torpedoes and shadow bombs had the punch to knock out a capital ship, but Falcon didn't carry either. Neither did Lando's Lady Luck or Talon Card's Wild Card. They'd been built with the intention of keeping patrol craft off their backs, not with having to knock out large targets. They all had to improvise. Han figured the best way to splatter a big Yuuzhan Vong ship was to trick the Vong into doing it for him. And that's just what happened. One of the pursuing Yuuzhan Vong tried to duck closer to the cruiser than Falcon, in order to shoot up at Han without danger of hitting his own vessel. But unfortunately, he forgot about Leia's bodyguard Miwal in the belly turret. Miwal gave a yowl of pleasure at the appearance of the target and hurled an array of laser bolts at the Vong. The enemy pilot was either hit or dazzled by the flares, because the coral skipper splashed into the enemy cruiser, its store of weapons erupting in fire as it slashed a brilliant flaming scar across the giant hull. Han shot off the bow of the cruiser and performed another frantic series of evasive maneuvers before the ships on his tail were dispersed or discouraged. Behind, the cruiser shivered as secondary explosions blasted outward toward its coral skin. The cruiser arced into a wide turn as Dovan Basils used for propulsion along one side were destroyed, while those on the other side continued to drive the ship forward, like a rowboat with one oar pulling, while the other trailed in the water. Another ship turned away from Jaina. He could leave it to Bel Iblis's fleet to finish the cruiser off. He cast a glance at Leia, who was sitting white-knuckled in the co-pilot's seat. "How are we doing?" She shook her head. "Bel Iblis has caught up to the rearmost enemy, but we're still the only force between the Yuuzhan Vong and Ebak Nine." "Better find us another target, then," Han said. The Smugglers' Alliance squadron was doing a lot of brilliant flying, but it was outnumbered, and many of its ships, like Millennium Falcon, were unsuited for fleet combat. Fortunately, the enemy seemed largely at a loss as to how to cope with the attack. The Alliance had no uniform ships, therefore no uniform tactics, and that meant that both sides were improvising, and the Smugglers had a lot more experience at improvising than the Yuuzhan Vong. "Look out!" At the yelp from Leia, Han jerked at the sweat-slick controls and managed to avoid being swatted by the huge Errant Venture, the only real capital ship under his command. The Star Destroyer was pumping fire in all directions, from every weapon on the ship, and as the largest New Republic target was receiving a lot of attention in return. Booster Tarek was driving straight at one enemy ship after another, trying to force them away from their course, a tactic fraught with hazard, but thus far he seemed to be doing well enough. Perhaps the Vong remembered the way Luzankia had rammed their world ship at Borlias. Han found a pair of smuggler ships in the melee, and these had proton missile launchers. "Follow me," he told them. "I'll carve a path for you." And he led them in another slash at the Yuuzhan Vong. And later, after more slashes than he could remember, he saw the enemy battle group turn away from its objective. Sabong La howled in triumph as the battle group of Yun Yuuzhan, completely unmolested, drew near to Ebak Nine. He had caught the infidels utterly by surprise. "Open fire on the shields," he commanded. "Kusurin, you will dive onto the shield over the enemy command center at maximum thrust. Victory section, you will follow Kusurin to the shields and try to destroy them." As the other ships hammered away at the defenders, Kusurin made its death dive toward the moon. The frigate made a colossal impact on the shields, debris rising amid a roil of brilliant plasma jets. Other ships dived close, their Dovan Basils reaching out to snatch at the shields, trying to overload them. No success, but the War Master wasn't distressed. He had plenty of time before the nearest enemy could reach him. Savong La ordered another frigate to immolate itself, and then paused to consider the rest of the battle. Blazebugs, their lights and voices extinguished, represented the hundreds of craft that had been destroyed.
His forces were being overwhelmed, even the battle group of Yun Ka that he'd ordered to join him. The little motley squadron that stood in its way was, it appeared, too troublesome. "Attention all other battle groups," he commanded. "Once our troops are down on Ebak, you are commanded to withdraw into hyperspace and make your way to Yuuzhan'tar. This battle is lost, but you are ordered to preserve your lives and ships for the victorious battles that will follow. The battle group of Yun Yuuzhan will cover your withdrawal." He drew his slashed lips back for his final message, which he shouted in a tone of angry defiance that filled the huge room. "Praise to the gods! Long live Shimra, the Supreme One! Heroic Vong Prat!" The group commanders, those who still lived, returned the warrior salute. Ebak-9's shields shuddered as another frigate thundered down. Savonglaw sat back in his chair and ordered another capital ship to its death. "Prepare the Ogzil," he said. And as one of his subalterns attached the grasping appendages of the creature to one of the villips used for communication, Savonglaw detached himself from the cognition throne and lumbered from the dais. He wanted to deliver this particular message himself. The Ogzil had enfolded the villip by the time he arrived, its long antenna tail dangling. Savonglaw took the creature in one hand, gazed at it, and forced his face into a smile. Knowing that the Ogzil was broadcasting his words and his image on New Republic frequencies, he said in his crude basic, "This is War Master Savonglaw. We are having a Jedi hunt on Ebak-9. Although anyone else coming near will be destroyed, all Jedi are welcome to participate."